Well, it's only 10 days. Is it really only 10 days to the 2014 NFL draft, the draft that would never come, the draft that more than 96% of you who answered a recent PFT poll question would prefer happen in April, not May? Here's hoping the league office is paying attention and the league office finds a way to save some face and go back to April. And I think the explanation would be, well, the only reason we went to May was because there was a conflict at Radio City Music Hall. No conflict next year. We'll go back to April. Here's hoping that they do. Either way, we have a draft 10 days away. Did I already say that? Vince Young was drafted in the first round 8 years ago, third overall pick. And for a while, it looked like the Texans had really screwed up. That was the last time the Texans had the first overall pick. Remember, they took Mario Williams at a time when everyone thought they were going to take Reggie Bush. Houston native Vince Young was the afterthought. He went to the Texans at number three in the same Titans, in the same division as the Texans. And at times, you had to wonder whether or not Texans owner Bob McNair was laying awake at night staring at the ceiling, wondering why he didn't insist on his team taking Vince Young. Now, well, we know what's happened with Vince Young. He's out of the league. He's been out of the league since 2011. He's had stints with the Bills in the preseason. He was cut before the season started. And then last year with the Packers, later than maybe they should have given him a chance. If they'd assigned him earlier in the offseason and given him a chance to learn the offense, he may have been a much better alternative than anyone else the Packers ultimately had when Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone. So now, after another season out of the league, two full years out of the NFL, he's getting a chance with the Cleveland Browns, taking a physical today, according to Mark Berman of Fox 26 in Houston, and participating in the Browns' voluntary minicamp. And when you think about, now he hasn't been signed yet, but when you think about who the Browns already have signed, a quarterback, Brian Hoyer, recovering from the torn ACL, a guy who was brought in by the last regime. He was a guy that Mike Lombardi, now with the Patriots, really liked. Lombardi brought him in. Joe Banner brought him in. Rob Chudzinski coached him. He did fairly well until he tore that ACL. Had very limited time playing. So it's Hoyer. It's Alex Taney, the trick shot YouTube quarterback who never has really done anything in the NFL. That doesn't mean he never will. But when you look at the depth chart and you look at the options, and I'm still surprised they haven't added Rex Grossman, who is kind of the joined at the hip to the Kyle Shanahan system. Shanahan, now the offensive coordinator in Cleveland. I'm surprised Grossman hasn't been signed yet. Maybe Grossman comes in if Vince Young doesn't work out. And it's, look, Young has shown that he can get it done. The real challenge with Young, two things. First of all, is he willing to go to a team as a backup and accept his role as a backup? Now in Cleveland, he may go in as a starter. He may be the best option they have. Depends on what they do in the draft. But beyond that, when he's playing, when things are going well, everything's fine. Vince Young had a hard time dealing with adversity. That's when the wheels would come off, and ultimately the wheels flew off and got him essentially fired by the Tennessee Titans back in, what was it, 2010, during that season. And that's what ultimately resulted in Young joining the Eagles after the lockout ended, making that ill-advised dream team proclamation and now getting a chance with a team whose existence really for 20 years has been a nightmare. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Vince Young. I love good stories like this where a guy has been given up on and has an opportunity and takes advantage of it. He's getting the opportunity. We'll see whether or not he can take advantage of it. The NFL may be taking advantage of the opportunity to give young players more opportunities to become better players. Developmental league is something that new director of football operations Troy Vincent tells the Associated Press he's going to explore. If you watch this program, and thank you if you're watching it now. Thank you even more if you watched it last week when Corey Chavis and I talked about the need for a developmental program. When you consider all of the underclassmen who are now trying to get to the NFL to put in the years necessary to get to a second contract, because that big lure of the lottery windfall at the top of the draft isn't there anymore, the message to players is get out soon, get your time in, get toward your second contract. More guys coming out early than ever before. What do you do with all those guys once they've given up their NCAA eligibility? What do you do with all these guys if the current winds of change at the NCAA level result in the NFL maybe saying, you know what, we're going to get rid of that three-year rule. If guys want to come play professionally, if they're going to be employees at the college level, let them come be employees at the professional level. We'll develop them through a minor league system. A lot of questions about how this would all unfold. Would it be in the spring like the USFL used to be, like the Arena League currently is? That's not good news for the Arena League if there's an NFL minor league that plays in the spring. I think it should be in season, regular season. Now, would that dilute the fans to a certain extent? Well, at a time when the NFL is having a hard time getting stadiums full, You think about the neighboring communities. If they are served by a minor league team, and if you can go see NFL minor league football for a lot less money and closer to home, then you're less likely to pack up the kids and go to the nearest NFL stadium. So those are all issues the NFL would have to take into account. But at NFL Europe for a long time, and it had like 8 different names, that was an opportunity to develop not just players, but coaches, scouts, GMs, officials. The NFL hasn't had that for several years. The NFL needs it. And the best system, if you can find a way to make it work financially and not undermine the NFL, the best system would be in-season, minor league, guys being called up, guys being sent down, guys running the same offenses and defenses that the club they're associated with does. Now, you'd need 32 minor league teams. I don't know that it ever comes to that. But a good idea, at least from the standpoint of exploring the possibility. Very bad idea. And look, I'm compelled to mention the Donald Sterling situation, not because of what it means for him or the Clippers or the NBA, but anything this big. And how often is it that a story from another major sports league takes over the national conversation when it's not the NFL? It's usually an NFL story, whether it's Michael Sam or Manti Te'o or whatever has resulted in the NFL taking center stage. Now you've got the NBA taking center stage for reasons the NBA would never want. What lessons will the NFL learn from this? We wrote yesterday about the importance now of the NFL making sure that owners who are brought into the club, as it gets harder and harder and more expensive to own a team, are you getting someone with the right character? How do you even judge the character? At a time when we're obsessed with judging character of players, how do we judge the character of owners? It shouldn't be enough to just have the money to buy a team. There needs to be something more that goes along with it. And, you know, I mean, Donald Sterling, Donald Trump, I'm not going to say there's any similarities between the two, but Donald Trump likes to say outlandish things publicly. You get a guy in a situation where somebody may be recording him privately, who in the heck knows what the guy's going to say? That's something the NFL needs to be concerned about, because the rubber band is being stretched even farther now with the ways these things can come out. And you have to also be concerned about some of your current owners as these guys get older. You know, the filter starts to disappear. I think that was a factor to a certain extent with Donald Sterling, who is 80 years old, not making an excuse for him, just trying to understand how things like this happen. The NFL's got a lot of owners on the older side. You got to be concerned about where the next TMZ tape is going to come from and what kind of problem it's going to create for the National Football League. They need to be proactive about this. They need to do a good job of training their current owners. They need to be sure to insist on diversity and inclusiveness in all respects. And when it's time to include new owners, you have to be as concerned about the character of the owner as you are about his or her bank statements. I think it's just as important. And as we see these teams get more and more valuable, it's harder to find people who have the money, but I think it's still important to make sure you're getting the right people involved. And one last note about the Donald Sterling situation. Somebody contacted me Saturday night and made a point, very good point. Well, Daniel Snyder is very appreciative of Donald Sterling right now, because Daniel Snyder's issues with racism and the Redskins' name take a major backseat to what Sterling did. But depending upon where these dominoes fall, and depending upon how big of an issue this is, and depending upon how many people make the connection between the incredibly ignorant comments of Donald Sterling and a racist team name that is sitting in plain view, and there it is. Are the breadcrumbs going to lead over, and are we going to reach critical mass? It's going to happen at some point. Is the Donald Sterling thing in a roundabout way going to make the critical mass come sooner than it would have for a changing of the Redskins' name? The reaction by the NFL could be so extreme that they decide we have to eradicate anything that potentially could be construed, intentionally or otherwise, as a racist message. And what better place to start than a name that I understand there's a debate on this, but just the fact that there's a debate, just the fact that reasonable minds can differ on whether or not the Redskins' name is racist and offensive, that should be reason enough to come up with something that there can't be a reasonable debate about whether or not it's racist or offensive. When we come back, nothing offensive about the name Buccaneers, although that's one of the ridiculous arguments we get from time to time. Well, you have to get rid of this name and that name and this name and that name. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, been around 40 years. Their 40th anniversary of when they entered the league was just a few days ago. Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times will join us to talk about where the Bucs are now as they get ready to unveil hideous new uniform. And then it's time for my hideous PFT Live mock draft. How's it different than the PFT mock draft? It just is. And I'm going to have some fun with this one. I'm so sick of these mock drafts. I am taking the restrictor plate off, and we're going to have some fun. We're going to do that to wrap up the show. Before that, we'll have some fun with Rick Stroud. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers with the larger logo. They should make that logo so large it covers the entire uniform. I don't mind the logo. I hate the uniform, but we'll get to see plenty of it this season. And a guy who will be seeing every game up close, whether he likes it or not, the uniform. Preseason, regular season, Rick Stroud, Tampa Bay Times. Rick, what's up, buddy?
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Have I ever asked you what you think of the hideous new uniforms? Not that I'm trying to influence you by adding the adjective hideous when I talk about them.
No, you haven't. Let's keep it that way.
You know, I asked Jason Light, the team's GM at the league meetings, if he saw the new uniforms before he took the job. And he hesitated just long enough to make me think that maybe he doesn't like them as much as everybody says, but I don't want to put words in his mouth. So no 1 to 10 scale for you on what you think of the uniform?
You know what, Mike? I like the old ones. That's just me. But when I say old, I don't mean creamsicle necessarily, although those have gotten in favor of late for whatever reason. I think they're not a great uniform, but I think it's going to grow on people a little bit. I mean, I remember when Denver made a radical change, and in the beginning I thought, wow, I don't know about those Bronco uniforms. Now I like them, so I'm not saying you'll love these like you love the Broncos, and it all comes down to whether they win or not. People will love them if they win.
Well, and that's the key. If you win, all of a sudden those uniforms look like the best things ever. What's the mood coming out of the organization and the mood of the fan base after last week's minicamp, first opportunity to get everybody together?
Well, I think it's good, Mike. I mean, I think, you know, Lovie Smith starting there with just the calm that he's brought and sort of, you know, return to pro football etiquette, if you will, with guys like Leslie Frazier and you know, Hardy Nickerson and some of the guys that he's brought aboard. And so, you know, watching them practice, watching them work is going to be very interesting with Jeff Tedford. I mean, I think that's an interesting choice for an offensive coordinator to kind of bring someone in from the college game. Who's all about getting guys in space and in tempo and things like that. I'm not saying he's Chip Kelly necessarily, but along those kind of lines. And just, you know, watching them work. I mean, I think Lovie and Jason were very pleased with what they saw. Now, you know, as Lovie said, I mean, they're running around in shorts, so you can't tell a whole lot. But it's the first time they've watched these guys on film, and they were able to put them on the grass with coaches and not only that, but put them in their system and kind of see, you know, who fits and who doesn't. I think overall they were pleased.
A guy who we last saw running around in shorts, they were camouflage shorts with helmet and shoulder pads, Johnny Manziel at his pro day workout. There was a report last week from Ed Werder of ESPN that the Buccaneers would seriously consider taking Manziel if he's there at number 7. What do you think happens if Manziel's on the board when the Bucs are on the clock?
Mike, I think a lot of people that's not drafting in that top 5 or so, you know, we all, I think there's sort of starting to emerge a consensus of who those top 5 players are. And once you get past that, when you get to teams like Tampa Bay or Minnesota, who you can't really identify a franchise quarterback, I think it would be hard to pass on a guy like Johnny Manziel. There's certainly a lot of questions about, you know, him transitioning to the next level, but maybe not as many as you think by some guys' standards. And I know Lovie Smith watched a lot of college football. I wrote about this a couple weeks ago, and he watched a lot of Johnny Manziel, and he saw a guy like Russell Wilson, you know, win a Super Bowl. And he sees, if you look at his selection of Jeff Tedford, what mobility at the quarterback position can do. And I think they would, you know, they'd be remiss if they didn't consider him very strongly at that position.
And if he's not there, or if he's there and they decide not to go in that direction, what do you think they do with that 7th overall pick? Could it be his teammate at Texas A&M, Mike Evans, that ends up being the next Buccaneer?
Well, that's certainly possible. I mean, if you wanted to just, make a prediction, and if they were going to pick at seven, maybe you just say they're going to take the best Texas A&M player available. I mean, seriously, they watched a lot of Johnny Manziel tape, and so who shows up in that, right? Mike Evans and the left tackle. So, you could go either way. I mean, this team, it's two biggest needs. There's no doubt about it. If you just miss the quarterback for a second, and why should you? But if you did, you'd have to say they need a playmaker on offense at wide receiver. Vincent Jackson, is 31 years old. He's the most productive guy. After that, they went out and signed Lavelle Hawkins and, Lewis Murphy Jr., some of these guys. But they need a playmaker and someone who can stretch the defense on offense at the receiver position. And then you'd have to say they need another lineman. They got three guys they're really happy with. Most teams have, if you're good, you have four. Very few have five. So you might take a tackle in that situation because of the value of the position. Maybe play that guy at guard for a year or two because they signed Anthony Collins in the offseason, and then eventually move him as your franchise left tackle. So those are the two spots really right now is an interior lineman, although it might be too high to take a guard, so maybe you take a tackle and then a wide receiver.
If the draft were held at the same time this year as it was last year and in past years, we'd already know the answer to that question. Lovie Smith on Friday surprisingly said he likes the delay. I think he's the only person connected to the NFL who has gone on record to say they like it. What's your sense of the rest of the organization? How do they feel about having all this extra time to analyze and reanalyze and overanalyze?
I sense that because they're all new together, and not just, in terms of the front office with Jason Light and Lovie and a lot of the guys, I think they probably do embrace it a little bit more than some would. Overall, though, I mean, what we do. I mean, you just pick more guys apart is all you do. And you can only watch so much film. The extra 2 weeks, it's funny, I was talking to Roger Goodell. We had him down here in Tampa for an event at the Brooks DeBartolo High School. And basically, that whole thing at Radio City Music Hall to cancel it because there was some Easter program that ended up getting canceled. And now it looks like maybe they'll keep the draft in May. Who knows? But I think it's too much analysis, and that's usually what happens anyway. So it's two more weeks for them to find warts on guys, I guess.
A lot of people don't like it in May. A lot of people don't like a lull. A lull is never good for business, and we've been in a lull. And one thing that filled the lull last week was the Buccaneers minicamp. Any sense coming out of that first voluntary minicamp, whether or not it's going to be Josh McCown or Mike Glennon, if there isn't a Johnny Manziel or another rookie added in the first couple of rounds?
Mike, it's Josh McCown, 100%. I mean, there's a reason why they looked at a lot of tape of Mike Glennon, and nothing against him. And actually, he looked pretty good in terms of what they asked him to do. The thing about the minicamp was there was a lot of completed passes. Now, they didn't travel very far. I think that's going to be obvious with Jeff Tedford's offense if you go back and look at what he did with Cal. But Luke McCown is the guy that they're going to go with because of his experience. He's a little better athlete, they think, than some people give him credit for. He is very accurate as a passer. The question is, he's not playing, with the guys he had in Chicago. And so there's barely a supporting cast like that around him. I mean, really, you break it down, they got two playmakers, maybe three, and an offensive line that's relatively new, and they need help there. So it's unrealistic maybe to think he'll have the same success he had in Chicago, but he is, I think, there's versus, I don't know what Mike Glennon could do to unseat him short of an injury.
You mentioned that Roger Goodell was in Tampa on Friday. One of the things he told reporters was that Tampa will get another Super Bowl. Do you have an idea of when the Buccaneers, the city, the region, et cetera, will be in position to actually host that game?
Well, they're in position in about 10 minutes if they want to have it here. I don't think that's the issue. I think, there's, as Roger said, and he didn't get to decide, but there's a lot of competition for that game, to say the least. Personally, and a colleague of mine has said this, and I agree with him, if you can't grow a palm tree, you shouldn't have the Super Bowl. So that said, there's going to be a lot of Super Bowls, I think, still in the northern climates. And as Roger said, he goes, well, we still haven't had a cold weather Super Bowl because it's 59 degrees at MetLife Stadium when they kicked off last February. So I don't have a sense. I think it would be sooner than later. I don't know how they stack up beyond San Francisco in a few years, in Arizona, of course, this year. But, man, that game needs to come back here. I know there's some concerns about the lack of hotel rooms and being spread out, some people staying in Orlando and things like that. But I'll tell you what, the three Super Bowls I think they've had so far have all been pretty darn good. And I think for the most part, people enjoy the warm weather and the proximity of everything, you know, just being very close together.
Yeah, the last one was Super Bowl 43, that epic game between the Steelers and the Cardinals right down to the wire. And that was the first one I actually covered, and I thought it was a great city, and I hope it gets back to Tampa sooner than later. A guy who may be leaving Tampa, but he's under contract for one more year, Adrian Claiborne, first-round pick back in 2011. They're not going to pick up the option. Give us an idea of the thought process behind keeping him but not using that opportunity to extend his stay by one more year.
Well, I think it's a prove-it year for Adrian. I think this is a case where both the player and the team feel good about the decision, because if Adrian plays well, and he needs to anyway, then he becomes an unrestricted free agent, and he can look around at other teams as well as the Bucks, and the Bucks would still have options with him. He really took off. They could franchise him. They still have a chance to negotiate an extension. I just think the idea of guaranteeing him $6 million on injury. This is a guy who had a torn ACL and was out for a while. It's a difficult thing, and it's a projection with him. He's going to try to play left defensive end. He's been a right defensive end. It just makes sense. I mean, $7 million for that fifth year is, you know, he'd have to really hit it big with some high double-digit sacks to really, you know, kind of garner that market. So it just makes sense, and overall I think it's better for the player.
One of the things last week that helped us fill the time between free agency and the draft was the release of the schedule. And when I look at the Buccaneers' schedule, a couple things stand out. The first of which is a three-game road trip and a couple of two-game road trips. Any concern from the organization about that many times where you're away from home more than 1 week?
Yeah, it's not a great situation. The trade-off is you have the one element that Lovey liked and he mentioned is they start at home for two games. You know, you get the champions, Carolina, the first week. You have a lot of time between now and then to prepare for them. I think that's going to be a classic buck ball type 9-6 game, if you ask me, with those two great defenses. But and then, you know, you start right off in the division. I got two games at home, Mike. The tough thing I see there is the next three road games. Their first road game after their second home game is a Thursday night game. You're playing on Thursday night early in the season with your first trip away from Raymond James. So that's a tough task at Atlanta. The good news is they finish at home with two games. The bad news is they're against Green Bay and New Orleans. So you got to figure those teams will be fighting for playoff position. But if they're in it by any stretch of the imagination, then they'll have the home field advantage.
Well, but Rick, I've also got to imagine that from the standpoint of selling tickets, to have two games out of the gates at home and then two games in late December when, if the Buccaneers are out of it, it's even harder to fill the stadium. You can't be happy about having those two different times where you've got two games that are just a week apart.
Well, that's true. I would say this, in terms of selling tickets, Green Bay will come in force, trust me. They've filled up this place before. They will again. For that matter, the Saints travel well. So that you're right, though. I mean, you don't want to have to do that. The only trade-off is if you're playing at home in December and January, it means you're not at Chicago. Their coldest weather game is at Chicago in around Thanksgiving, the weekend before that. So, you know, they got a break there because they have games in Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and it could have flipped on them. They could have had some really bad weather in December. So if you're going to be home, better to be home where it's warm.
Well, that's a great point, and the schedule is what it is, but if a team can get off to a good start, they build a lot of momentum, build a lot of confidence, and there's a buzz with the Buccaneers that this could turn out very well for them. What's the general expectation level among the fan base for this year?
Well, you know, it's a great question, Mike. I'm not sure if people expect them to, you know, to win the NFC South by any stretch, but by the same token, we've seen that happen in this division. I think the biggest thing is, in a guy like Lovie Smith, unlike Greg Schiano and what had transpired two previous years, Tampa fans know Lovey. They know what he's about. He's a proven head coach in the NFL that won close to 10 games a year in Chicago, and they know the plan. I think if fans know the plan and they see the plan, they'll buy into it. If you don't know what they're about, if it's a different deal every single week, whether that's quarterback or defense or schemes, then that's harder to do. But they'll have more patience with Lovey. Now, you know, he's still got to win at some point. And I think if they see the improvement from 4-12 to a team that's at least relevant, and that's been the key word that Lovey's used, then they'll accept whatever they do.
Last one for you. You mentioned Greg Schiano. What do you think happens with him short-term and long-term?
on the short term, he's making the coaching tour, right? I mean, that's what you do. He's all the friends of Belichick, the FOBs, he's bouncing around, Urban Meyer and all those guys, and he'll take great notes. And, you know, I think short term, you know, he's got a 3-year, $9 million payday coming to him, so there's no hurry. Long term, I think he loves the NFL, Mike. I think he loves it. That's not to say he wouldn't become a college coach again somewhere, but I think he wants to stay in the pro game. And if there's not a spot on his on Bill Belichick's staff now, maybe there will be sometime.
And, you know, we saw not that long ago a lot of coaches, assistant and head coaches, more assistants choosing the college ranks. I think we could see an influx back to the NFL with all the issues that they're having in college football, but that's a much more complicated issue for another day. Rick, thanks as always for your time. We'll see what the Buccaneers do on May 8th, then we'll be checking out your work at the Tampa Bay Times website. Thanks again.
All right, Mike, enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right, Rick Stroud, Tampa Bay Times. Great stuff on the Buccaneers. And, you know, last year with the Eagles, there was just a vague sense of nobody really expected anything. They were just kind of happy for the change. There was more trepidation, though. I think with Tampa, there's more of a sense of euphoria because Lovie Smith is not Greg Schiano, and Lovie Smith is Lovie Smith, and he had the Bears relevant far more often than not in Chicago, and I think that the Buccaneers faithful would take that. They would just love to be relevant on a consistent basis, and maybe they will be. If it is, it's not because of those uniforms. When we come back, it's time to roll out the annual PFT Live mock draft. Not to be confused with the PFT mock draft. We've done a couple of them this year, and I just hate mock drafts. I hate them now more than ever, but when in Rome. So come back, and you'll find out what we have to say. For the first four picks, we're gonna milk this cow between now and the first day of the draft. We are back. This is PFT Live. You have seen more mock drafts than you care to see by now. I don't like mock drafts. Everybody has one. They provide a context for talking about how the draft may unfold. But you know what? So does a list of the picks in round one. That provides a context, and you can talk about what teams may or may not do. But everybody does it, so we are not contractually obligated, but we do it all the time, and I don't like to change. So I'm going to keep doing the PFT Live mock draft. And I decided that, because, look, it's all just for fun anyway, let's really have some fun with this PFT Live mock draft. This is by no, and this is where I get into all the legal disclaimers. This is by no means a prediction of what's going to happen. This is just an example of what could happen. Ultimately, you've got 32 different teams making their decisions. This year, 31, because the Browns have two picks. We don't know what they think about these players. We hear different things. We don't know what's true. We don't know what's not true. So, in an effort to just have a little bit of fun as we wait for this damn draft to get here. Here's the PFT Live mock draft for 2014. The first four picks and the first team on the clock, the Houston Texans. I believe that the Texans, with the first overall pick in the 2014 draft, will select South Carolina defensive end Jadeveon Clowney. Now, they may take Clowney with an idea that they'll keep him. They may take Clowney with an idea that they'll possibly trade him, depending upon whether or not another player they may want, and John McClain of the Houston Chronicle believes it's Clowney or Johnny Manziel, later in round one. If they can't work it out, then they'll keep Clowney. Remember when the Chargers drafted Eli Manning 10 years ago? It wasn't a given that they were going to trade with the Giants. That deal wasn't done until the Giants were on the clock later in round one. So we don't know how this is all going to play out. Texans may take Clowney and keep him. They could take him and trade him. That's to be determined as we work our way through round one. And here's the way I've done this. I don't know what the next 28 picks are going to be after today. Somebody shared with me a link last week. And yes, this is a digression, but bear with me, please. Someone shared with me a link last week that for the final season of Breaking Bad, show creator Vince Gilligan, when he did the scene with Walt buying the assault rifle, they didn't know how that was going to play out. I assumed they had everything planned out all the way to the end. They didn't know what they were going to do with the assault rifle. So I don't know what's going to happen the next 28. I'll worry about that as the process unfolds. For today, it's the first four. That said, Clowney number one. with the second pick in the draft, the St. Louis Rams, who very much would like to trade down from number two and very well could trade with the Atlanta Falcons, who have the sixth overall pick and could try to trade up for Khalil Mack. I think at the end of the day, they don't get a deal done and the Rams decide to go with Auburn tackle Greg Robinson. Yes, they kept Roger Saffold. Yes, they still have Jake Long. But that is one of the major glaring weaknesses for that team. You can't get enough good offensive linemen. You get those guys in positions where they can help protect Sam Bradford so he can reach his full potential. They're fully invested in getting the most out of Sam Bradford. One way to do that is get the most out of the protection around a guy who is recovering from a torn ACL. So, Clowney 1, Robinson 2. Now here's where it gets interesting. With the third pick, the Jacksonville Jaguars, I believe, will trade down. And that's where they will trade to number 6 with the Atlanta Falcons, who will come up and take Khalil Mack, the linebacker out of Buffalo. Look, I really don't know what the Falcons are thinking about doing, but they are being far more indiscreet than I thought that they would ever be if they're truly interested in Jadeveon Clowney. It's obvious they're interested in Jadeveon Clowney, which I think may be a bit of a misdirection. I think Mack is ultimately going to be their guy. They pop up 3 spots from 6 to 3 to get Khalil Mack before anyone else can get their hooks into a player that some think is the best guy on the board, regardless of position, even better than Jadeveon Clowney. And it's going to be cheaper for the Falcons to move up 3 spots because they're only moving up 3 spots. What will the Jaguars do with that 6th pick? Well, we'll find out tomorrow. One thing they won't do is they won't get Johnny Manziel, because this is the next trade that we're throwing into this mix. And good luck figuring out how the rest of this is going to play out. But with the 4th overall pick in the draft, I think the Browns are going to opt to not make a pick. You know, it's one thing to have that pick. It's another thing to use that pick. They need a quarterback. But what do? They pick the wrong quarterback? I think they're going to slide down to number 16. Now, they may jump back up. Who knows? That's to be determined. But I don't think Jerry Jones is going to be able to help himself. When he signed Anthony Spencer over the weekend and addressed arguably one of the needs at pass rusher, who knows what Spencer has left, and it's just a 1-year deal, it makes the need at pass rusher less glaring. They don't have to stand pat at number 16 and wait for a pass rusher, best one on the board, to come into their laps. Jerry Jones has made a move in round one or done something with a first-round pick 20 out of 25 years that he's owned the team. And who the hell cares what happens? This is for fun. Let's say the Cowboys come up to number 4 and take Johnny Manziel. That would shake things up on the evening of May 8th. It's not a prediction, but that would make things a lot of fun. Johnny Manziel is a member of the Dallas Cowboys. He points out that he was born at halftime of a Cowboys game back in November of 1992. Jerry Jones loves him, reportedly gushing about Johnny Manziel in the presence of Tony Romo less than 2 weeks ago. That would just be. And who knows what they have to give up to move up 12 spots. Who knows how this is going to play out. Maybe there'll be a third team involved and the Browns only drop down a certain amount. Who knows? It's not binding. It's not a prediction. I'm just having some fun because I'm like you on this. I just want the draft to get here. So let's fill the void by having some fun. And that's the end of today's fun. Sorry, you're going to have to tune in tomorrow for picks 5 through 8. For today, to recap, Clowney goes first, Robinson goes second, Khalil Mack goes third to the Falcons, and Johnny Football ends up playing football for America's team, which would get a major shot in the arm if they could add one of the big-name stars to come out of this year's draft. We'll continue tomorrow with picks number 5 through 8. We'll continue the discussion tonight, 5:30 Eastern Time, Pro Football Talk on NBCSN. And as always, around the clock, profootballtalk.com. It's only 10 days away. It's time to ramp up for the draft, and we've got plenty of content coming your way. Stay with us all day long, all night long, all week long, all year long, for your entire life. Profootballtalk.com. See you back here tomorrow.